I don't do very many talks these days. I used to do a lot more. But I do feel it a privilege that I'm given the high seat and allowed to share ideas and thoughts that I hope are of some value, but it isn't necessarily so. You know, people get to speak, and therefore we assume they're an authority. I don't like that assumption. I assume that we are seekers, and that I think is a correct assumption in the fact that we've all come together here at this, what I would like to rename as the Seekers Center, a place for people who are in search of meaning, in search of understanding, in search of spiritual awakening, gather here for various reasons, to study, to share, to try and make some progress in that quest. As such, I will be happy to share these thoughts with you this evening. I encourage you to reflect on them, consider them, evaluate them for yourself, and decide what to do with them after the talk. When I was thinking of a topic for this evening, I first thought I should talk on something really grand, the unconditioned mind. And then I thought better and said, I'd better talk about something I'm really familiar with. And so I'm very familiar with anxiety and worry. And so to just talk about anxiety and worry, I thought would not really inspire anybody to come to a talk. Probably, you know, who wants to hear about anxiety and worry? I've got enough worry. So I did say freedom from anxiety and worry, but not to be too presumptuous, because immediately one of our regulars was open enough to ask me, so are you free from anxiety and worry? And I have to confess, certainly not. I'm in recovery. But as I said, I do know quite a lot about anxiety and worry, and that is why I do feel comfortable talking about and reflecting on this topic with you, because it is a condition that I have lived with for, I can't remember when it started, since childhood, I think. And I know that my brother also suffered from this condition, much worse than me, I think, because we parted ways and I had the good fortune of ending up in a Buddhist monastery and having the guidance of a wonderful meditation master and a very wise spiritual teacher who, you know, despite my thickness of skull and stubbornness of spirit at times, was able to maybe somehow drive in some of that wisdom and some of these understandings that certainly have benefited me over the many years. And in many ways, and one of the ways was developing a more healthy way of relating with this condition, the tendency to be anxious, the tendency to worry about life. My brother wasn't quite as fortunate, and to his end, he did suffer, you know, quite strongly from this condition. And that isn't uncommon, though, because I think it is quite common amongst people these days, ordinary, normal people, to suffer from this condition to one degree or another, at one time or another. And I think this may be the reason why we have quite a good turnout this evening, because we can relate to this. This is something that is part of our lives that we have noticed. And I often say there are only probably only two types of people who do not suffer from anxiety and worry. One is the perfectly enlightened person. By definition, according to Buddhist teachings and Buddhist tradition, the perfectly enlightened person is completely free of greed, hatred, and delusion. Their mind is said to be above the influences of the worldly conditions of praise and blame, gain and loss, sickness and health, birth and death, and all the rest of it, so that they have this perfect equanimity. There is no bias in the mind that would be the cause for anxiety and worry. And they have no fear. And so they, I assume, can live life very peacefully, which is the definition of the perfectly enlightened person, one who is free of all the burdens, the mental anguish that comes from ignorance. The other type of person who may be free, I don't know, but at least not be aware of anxiety and worry, is the completely deluded person, oblivious to everything, just completely living in a different reality, you could say completely crazy. They don't worry about anything either. Now, most of us are, somewhere in between these two. And so we do tend to experience anxiety and worry. And it is worthwhile to reflect on it, because all of us know that it detracts from the quality of life. I don't think anyone really enjoys the experience of being in a state of anxiety or being in a state of worrying about something. I don't think that's an enjoyable experience. I don't think it's something we look forward to. It doesn't feel good. We say it's a negative emotion, a negative mental state. Negative means that it detracts, takes away from the quality of life, makes us more miserable and less happy. So it's something that we have experienced, something that we know, and something that is unpleasant. And yet, we seem to be caught in it often. Why? And so this evening, my reflection is on why do we worry? What do we worry about, and what can we do about it? And I think that the first question I'd like to ask you is, do you worry about anything in the past? Are you anxious about things in the past? You may at first glance say, well, yes, I am worried. But if you look closely, if you are saying that you worry about things in the past, what it probably means is that you're worrying about some consequence that may come about from something in the past. With regards to the past, we may have regret, remorse, guilt, shame, all sorts of other emotions, but not anxiety, not worry. I don't worry in the slightest bit about the exams I took in 1970. I feel no stress over it. In those days, going to college, my memory of it was that it was very unpleasant. And the worst part of it was that a year's work was judged at the final exams, which were crammed into a two-week period. Every subject, you took a three-hour exam. And that was your grade, whether you passed or failed. And, it is a lot of stress, and there is a lot of anxiety, but see, I'm not worried in the slightest bit about it. may not sound remarkable to you, and it's not, because the results are known. It's something in the past. It doesn't cause anxiety and worry. If you say, well, I am worried, you know, I made a mistake, and I'm worried about it. What I'm worried about is the consequence of that mistake. Somebody finding out, I'm going to be fired, or something bad is going to come out of it. But the worrying is not about the past. It's about the future. Right now, this very moment, if you're in the present moment, are you worried about something? Are you anxious about something in the now? So when you went to the last time you went for a checkup, you went to the doctor's office, sat in the waiting room for the results of your test. Were you anxious? I'm sure most of us, especially as we get on a little in age, yeah, it's quite stressful. There's a lot of anxiety. If you've, you know, a test to deter that's going to tell you what it is you've got or you haven't got. So you think, yeah, I'm worried in the present. But no, you're not worried in the present. You're worrying, but it's not about the present. The present is still okay. This present moment may be pleasant or unpleasant. It may even be painful, but that's not the cause of the worry. That's not what anxiety is. That's just maybe you don't like the pain. That's not worry. So what is the worry? What is the anxiety? It's never about the past. It's never about the present. It's always to do with a projection of something to come. Something ahead, something in the future. Future not necessarily 100 years from now, maybe 5 minutes from now. I'm sitting at the doctor's office. I know he's going to come out and he's going to give me the results of this test. And, you know, I'm anxious. I'm worried. Why? Because, well, the result may be negative, meaning it's something we really don't want to hear. It's something we don't want to hear because it's something we don't like. We're afraid of it. It may be, and it may be really unpleasant. I mean, sometimes you go to the, you know, I've been relatively healthy or most of my life, well, you know, the sickness that you get when you're young, the various illnesses that you get that are due to a bacteria or a virus or, you know, I had tons of those things because I lived in Asia for a long time in the jungle, and everybody got sick. You're always sick. I lived there 10 years, I was sick. but it doesn't create any anxiety. It's just really unpleasant. You know, so you get sick, you get malaria, it's really awful, but you don't worry about it, you don't think about it. You get typhoid and you get typhus, and it's really unpleasant. Everybody gets it. You don't, there's not much, it's just normal. Now, last year I went to the doctors and, you know, they, for a checkup, thinking I'm perfectly healthy. Well, not quite perfectly. Everybody's healthy until they're told they're sick. So I went to the doctor and he diagnosed that there was a problem. So he sends me for a CAT scan. And they do this CAT scan and it comes out that I've got a problem. And you know, I receive a phone call from the doctor at 11 o'clock at night. I mean, this doctor has never called me ever. You know, I just go to see him once a year. I didn't even know he had my phone number. So he calls me and he says, John, how are you? I said, He said, "This is Dr. So and so. How are you?" I said, "Oh, I was fine until you called." I was fine, but as soon as I heard, "This is Dr. So-and-so, and I'm calling you about the results of your test," and immediately, I wasn't fine. And, you know, "I want you to go to the emergency room." "No, I'm really not fine now." So, you know, then all of a sudden, the mind is, you know, projecting what's going to come of it. And all the possibilities that are there. Some of those possibilities can be quite unpleasant, you know, really much to our dislike. And when something we have a really strong vested interest in something, in the either liking or disliking, it's got tremendous power over us, you see. It's like the stock market. If you've got a lot invested in the stock market and you check the, you know, these figures every day and it goes up and you're really happy and it goes down and you don't feel so happy if you don't have anything invested in the stock market, who cares whether it goes up or down? So as soon as we've got very strong investment in the sense that, yeah, sure, I don't want to have a terminal cancer or something that's really, you know, unpleasant. It's really a terrible thought. So, you know, there's an invested reaction of fear and dislike, and the possibility that it may be that then generates anxiety, worry. It may be that. And that's how anxiety and worry is born. It's from that recognition that the future, be it one moment or 1 minute or 1 day or 1 year or 100 years or 10 years ahead, is unknown, it's uncertain. And in that uncertainty, anything is possible. From the most frightening, terrible, to the most lovely, pleasant. But we don't know which one. And we really don't want it to be the frightening, terrible possibility. So the mind generates, and it generates through this basic knowledge that it's uncertain, the possibility of it being something really bad, not wanting it to be really bad and being afraid and then worry. Maybe it will be. And anxiety. And this can take on, you know, various degrees. It can be quite crippling for some people if it's extreme. There are, you know, we call it anxiety disorders. It's something quite serious. And to address something of that nature, you probably need much more than anything I'm going to say this evening and any light that I can shed on this topic this evening. I mean, it's an illness, and it may require some really intense work with skilled people. But on a, you know, less intense level, just the normal worries and anxieties that are quite common, we can reflect on, and we can begin to unravel and begin to loosen the knots and free ourselves to some degree through understanding, through beginning to have a closer view, a view that's closer to reality and in accordance with reality. What I mean by this is, say this person, okay, there is the uncertainty, I the future I may have, you know, it's possible, I'm waiting for the results of this test. And well, if we, you know, it's like, if we give ourselves over completely to this anxiety and worry through the fear of it being the negative result, it could be that my teacher used to say it's dying before you die. You know, you haven't been told that you've got anything terminal and you're already dying there in a miserable state of mind, so full of fear, so full of anxiety, so full of worry. You're utterly miserable and you haven't been told anything yet. So you're not worrying about the present, you're anticipating the future. So what do we as people who have a degree of awareness of the human condition? Everyone here has a degree of awareness of the human condition. That is, we are vulnerable. All of us are vulnerable. All of us are subject to the uncertainty and the impermanence of life, and definitely the uncertainty of the future. Every single one of us has some idea that, you know, I'm vulnerable, but we don't deal with it all in the same way. Most of us, the majority, like to, you know, try to, you know, if we are aware that it's uncertain, the first thing we try to do is to find guarantees, security. I want to make sure, and I want reassurance. So we do a great many things, some of them very good, actually, some of them very stupid, to try and reassure ourselves, to sort of have some sort of warranty that the future is going to be all right. We buy health insurance. Is that good? Yeah, it's a really good thing to do, to have health insurance. It should be made available to everyone. But it's not insurance for health. It's insurance for sickness. It's something there where you're going to get sick because you don't know when, so you want to be able to pay for the treatment of the sickness. There's no insurance of health. Nobody can guarantee health. But some people, you know, in addition to getting health insurance, you know, then we want extra guarantee for health, you know, all these magic diets and magic foods and magic health, lifestyles that you just won't get sick. And many of these things are actually good. You know, the guidelines for many of them are good. But it's to believe it, and this is a guarantee. I'm not going to get sick ever because I do the Chinese water cure. I did. I don't do it anymore. I used to do the Chinese water cure. The Chinese water cure is that in the evening you're supposed to boil water, and this is in a country where water is, it has to be boiled before you can drink it. Here you could probably just get regular tap water. Put it by your bed stand, on the bed stand, somewhere on the side. As soon as you get up in the morning, you got to drink 5 glasses of water, okay? And it's, you know, this was in a tropical country, so it wasn't too bad. It's hard, you drink 5 glasses of water. And it's all right. I mean, as long as you can go and pee often. but it was guaranteed that, you know, if you do this Chinese water cure, 5 glasses of water, you just wouldn't get sick. You wouldn't. I mean, I did get sick. But, you know, it was a good theory. And I'm not saying that all things are equal, that all the suggestions or lifestyle choices that we make in order to promote good health are of equal value or that they're foolish. They're not. But the notion that you're going to be guaranteed perfect health for the rest of your long, long life, because obviously you're going to live a long, long life, you know. Whatever the average is, you're going to go beyond it because you're doing this. And there, it's delusion. There is no guarantee. If there was such a thing, everybody would be doing it already. Everybody would be successful at what they've tried. But that's why they're trying something else, because it didn't work. That's why always a new diet or a new fad or a new food. There's nothing wrong with these things, but they can't guarantee for everyone this, you know, kind of a, what my teacher used to call it, seeking for a turtle with a mustache. You know, that's just, it's not there. But we want this guarantee. We need it. So, you know, another avenue. If you think the Chinese water cure was not that great, I tried worse things than that one. Urine therapy. Urine therapy can cure anything at all. I'm not going to talk about that this evening. But you can get the book on it. The author was adamant that it worked. Many people that I, including myself, tried it. I didn't find it very useful. Others found some benefit from it. But there are so many of these things. No guarantee, no warranty. So if somebody gives you a guarantee of something and you believe it, you may feel better. And so if you feel better, I guess it's good, isn't it? If it relieves your anxiety and your great discomfort with the uncertainty of the future, of course it's better. Some people go to, maybe you go to get your lucky charm. You know, in Thailand, it's very common for people to go to monks to get their amulets that have been chanted over and blessed by very powerful meditation masters. And they're very common in Thailand. So when during the Vietnam War, and Thailand was involved in that, sent some soldiers over there. And before you'd go to war, you'd go to the most venerable meditation master, and you'd bow and make offerings and ask for one of these amulets, which then he would put around your neck, and you'd wear it to protect you from bullets so you wouldn't get shot. And the monk guaranteed it with the one condition: you won't die unless it's your karma. Great, isn't it? Oh, thank you. No, you're not going to get it. You will not have an accident unless it's your karma. So these guarantees, if it helps you, okay. Then, there are other ways. How else can we, what will relieve this? It's like an itch that's really nagging us. It's really making it difficult for us to settle down and be comfortable. The uncertainty of the future. It's not known. We want to know something certain. Let's go and have our... the Theosophical Society promotes many things. Astrology is fine, but go and have your fortune told, may help. But even things like, positive thinking, the power of positive thinking. If you really can think positively, it's going to happen just the way you want it. If you are absolutely 100% positive in your attitude and in your outlook and in your view of what's going to be, it will be. Some people sell that too. Does it work? Well, it definitely does work to some degree, because the power of thought is real, and what we put out is real, and of course it affects us. Just having a positive mind is very healthy, and that's a very good thing to put out. But that you would believe that you can think your way, think the world in, or create the world in exactly accordance with your wishes and desires at all times, seems to me a very arrogant position to take. It does not seem realistic. It's to say that I have a possibility of creating. Yes, we have. But to say that I can create exactly what I want and, you know, dismiss any other influence or power in the universe is very, very foolish. Another way that people tend to cope with this itch or this kind of difficulty of being confronted with the human condition is that we resort to external power, external almighty, omniscient, omnipotent, that is all loving and all caring and will look after us and we got no worries. And it's going to be fine. And that's good, provided you're willing to accept that some of the things that come your way are not very pleasant. But it should be fine because that's what the omnipotent, omniscient is giving you. And if people have an attitude like that, well, and they do it. They say, well, what God has sent my way is what I need now. And this is good. This is fine. So you don't worry. You don't have any anxiety over it. And that's fine. It works. Provided you can have that faith. I unfortunately am not thus gifted. I was never of the faith temperament. I don't believe easily. I just don't, you know, my life experiences from an early age made me, made me very conscious and very aware of how much of life happened that I didn't like. And actually, I didn't think was good for me. This is the other one that people often resort to. Whatever happens is for the better. It's a growing experience for you. It's always for the better. You know, to tell you the truth, I don't know. I don't really believe it, but I'm not here to tell you what to believe. I'm just here to reflect. And my experience is that, yeah, some bad things happen to us, some good things happen to us. They're both learning experiences. I would much rather learn from good things. And some of the bad things or unfortunate things that happen, you know, they scar and they leave, you know, damage. It's not all for the better. But if it helps you cope with this uncertainty, that may be all right. You know, saying, well, it's a learning experience. At least I'm not worried about it. That's good. So I'm going through all these different ways that we find and try to cope with this uncertainty. What do I do? Well, I'm a Buddhist. As a Buddhist, one of the things that I come to terms with acknowledge is that life is unsatisfactory. And that life is unsatisfactory isn't as strong as some people say. Some people say life is suffering, and we expect all Buddhist people to go around with a sour face, which I do sometimes. But that's because I'm not a very good Buddhist. If you're a really good Buddhist, you'd be quite happy, cheerful. You have no problem. Life is suffering. It's just all that's saying is that life is the way it is. It's uncertain, it's impermanent, it cannot give you security, it cannot give you a guarantee of anything other than if you're born, you're going to die. That's all. That's the only guarantee there is. If you're born, you're going to die. Anything else in between that, it's pretty open, dependent on a great number of variables, which we could say is environmental, genetic, karmic, and there's just so much that you, the choices you make, is what's going to shape that and fill that space between the birth and the death. And you do have a say in it, a very important say. We are not victims of circumstances. The past is what is the present. Yeah, this is what I've got to work with. What I do with this is creating. I'm generating something. I have a choice. And this is where the shaping and contribution from the individual comes in to create the future. But as for the past, I'm not going to go back there and try and change it. This is what I've got to play with. I can't start by being, the Buddha. No, I'm not the Buddha yet. Right now, I'm not. It's like I have a friend and he's listening to this right now. And he's just happens to be a lot younger than I am, a lot taller than I am. He looks a lot better than I do. So I always think, whenever I see him and he's wearing a certain shirt, I think, if I get a shirt like that, maybe I'll look like him. It doesn't work. He wears a cap and I say, people say, oh, you should get a cap like that. They know I like hats. I said, it's not going to do any good. I'm not going to look like that. This is what I've got to work with. This is what you've got to work with, what's sitting here now. So as a Buddhist, I come to terms with this. And then I look at my experience, this human condition. To study Buddhism in its real form is not to study a great deal of books, is not to go and read the whole scriptures or even some of the scriptures. It's not to memorize a whole lot of theology. Sure, you can do that. And that's what most monks do in Buddhist countries, unfortunately. My teacher was not one of them. You want to study Buddhism? You study it in there, that body, that mind. Reflect, observe, understand. Get to the source of what you're experiencing. What is your human condition like? What can you learn from it? So this is the idea of reflecting on what I'm experiencing as something practical, not just thinking about it and reading about it, or as a philosophy. Okay, anxiety, worry, what is it? Not what it's defined as, what is it when you experience it? What is the mind doing? And this is how I study. I look at my mind, and sometimes you can be blind to something for a long time. We remain blind and to one degree or another until we're enlightened. But gradually, if you have become a little more self-aware, you start noticing. So you start noticing this habit, anxiety and worry. I'm worried about what's going to happen. So, okay, I'm worried about what's going to happen, maybe retirement. Will I have enough to live on? Maybe health, maybe you know, your job, your relationship, your children. There are so many things that we, as soon as we start thinking about it, the possibilities for terrible things happening are there in our mind. It's there. I can worry about it. What can I do about this? Now, as a Buddhist, and I would think in my choice is to say, the future is uncertain. There's nobody here who can guarantee it. I don't believe it, anyone who's going to guarantee it to me. I just don't, you know, I don't believe it. So I need to do something else. What I need to do is come to terms with this fact that the future is uncertain and that it is unknown to me now. I really don't know, and anything is possible. Can I do that? Can I have the courage to do that? If I can't, then I'm not going to be able to be free of anxiety and worry. If I come to terms, if somehow or other I understand that it's uncertain, and I allow it to remain uncertain, and I am able to stand back, not go to the future, stand back into the present, stand right here in the present. What can I do now? What do I know now? What can I do now to create the future that I would want? What can I contribute? So, I don't want to be sick. All right. Instead of, you know, trying to get a guarantee that I'm going to remain healthy and fit for the rest of my long years, I lose the vanity of youth and health, and I accept the reality of the human condition. I am subject to old age, sickness, and death. I am subject means I'm vulnerable. So, what can I do to look after this condition? How can I best look after my health? And what am I willing to do is the next thing, you know, how far am I going to go? I've heard that if I do this diet of, you know, calorie restriction and live only on pine nuts and, you know, thistles, you know, I got a better chance of living to 90 than if I eat my regular meal. Well, maybe I'm not, you know, that may be, maybe I'm not willing to do that. I'm willing to do something else. What am I willing to do to look after myself? And I put my energy into that rather than the thinking about the things that may come in the future. I'm going to go and have an exam or sit for an exam at college. I used to teach at the College of DuPage, and very stressful for students around exam times. And I can relate to it. And I always used to say, you know, prepare as best as you can. Study, do the work. That's all you can do. You can't, it's pointless worrying about the results. Do the work. And that's the best you can do. Before the night before the exam, relax. Try to find something to do that's relaxing. If you can meditate, meditate. Do yoga, go for a walk. Don't cram. If you pass, you pass. If you fail, you fail. It's unknown. But you've prepared. So there shouldn't be, you know, there isn't quite the same degree of anxiety there. So this idea of coming to terms with a reality, a fact of life, the human condition is subject to uncertainty. We are subject to old age, sickness, and death. The future is unknown. It may be very pleasant, it may be miserable. I don't know. But what I do What I can know is this present moment. If I can know this present moment, and if I can remain in a state of mind that is not crippled, I will be able to look after this present moment. By looking after this present moment, I am looking after everything. Now, what cripples the mind is anxiety and worry cripples the mind. Anger cripples the mind. Fear cripples the mind. And sometimes we justify these things. We actually, you know, some people think that worry is a good thing because it makes you, you know, kind of prepare. You're better prepared. If you don't worry, you're not going to be prepared. It sounds reasonable, doesn't it? What's wrong with you? You're completely irresponsible. You don't care at all because you're not worried. We equate that caring and being responsible is the same thing as worrying. And I learned this in a very painful way. This young lady who introduced me this evening, much to your many of you who don't know her and me, is my wife. I'm blessed as I am. But I was married in a previous marriage. And nothing wrong other than what I want to recall about this experience was that at one stage, my wife at that time, was very, very sick. And she was in hospital for quite an extended period. And it was, and it's, you know, we were both not from this country. We had no family here. And so very isolated. And when somebody's sick for a long time, you really know that you don't have much support. It's just the two of you. And so, you know, this was quite a very trying period. And I was really worried about what was going to happen. And around the same time that she was released from the hospital, I got my father passed away in Australia. And so I was caught, you know, I had to go for my father's funeral, which is, you know, kind of an obligation. I wanted to go. But torn with, this feeling of looking after my wife, who's just been released from this hospital. And I was really, you know, kind of under a lot of stress and very, very anxious about what would happen when I left my wife and what was I going to find when I got to Australia. And I don't know if any of you, some of you will know that the flight from America, from say Los Angeles to Melbourne, is a nightmare. It's really a long flight. And so I left Chicago, went to LA, flew to Melbourne. And it takes 24 hours or something like to get to the, and you can imagine you're sitting there, and what's my mind, naturally, I'm worried. I wonder how she's feeling. Oh, I wonder what my sister is doing. I wonder how the funeral arrangements, I wonder, and worrying about all the things that could go wrong. I get to Australia, I stay there 1 week, just enough for the funeral, you know, get back on the plane another 20 hours. And I'm worrying. I wonder how she is. I wonder how things are going to be. I wonder whether, you know, things will get back to normal. And I come back and I'm worrying. And all along, I had this, below this activity of my mind, I felt that this was the right thing. You know, and I told you, I've been meditating for a long time. I'm a Buddhist and all that. But a part of me thought that was good. It was proof that I was really responsible. And I was thinking of all the possibilities. And I was caring. I was really caring. That's why I worried, because I cared so much. And after I got back in a few weeks of this, you know, it was like you have these revelations. And I saw myself. The way I was, you know, the way I was and how I actually was present for my wife was not very caring. A friend of mine who is still a monk, is a great meditator and a he's I've been trying to get him to come here for some time. He's fantastic. Great speaker, great teacher, everything. He's written couple of books. His latest book is Don't Worry, Be Grumpy. But actually, the title is not quite right, I don't think. Because when you worry, you are grumpy. Worried people are always grumpy. They're always on edge. They're always irritable. It's just walking on glass. There's this tension. Worried people, anxious people are very unpleasant to be around, as many of my friends will probably attest. Certainly my ex-wife felt it, and I eventually saw it. You cannot really be caring when you're worried. You are not there for the person in a caring way. You're there as a nervous wreck or somebody under great, there's so much edge to your presence. You can't be really responsible in the proper sense. And to be responsible means that you can evaluate the conditions, evaluate the situation, and make the best choice to look after this situation, this condition, this person. But if your mind is so crippled by anxiety and worry, that in itself, it makes you unable to really evaluate and make good judgment, good choices, and do the best thing. If you spend all your time worrying about it, how can you look after something? It's like the student who's going to have the exam, and he sits down to study, and all he's doing is worrying, I wonder whether I'll pass, I wonder whether I'll pass. I mean, is he going to learn? Is he going to study? You can't study. So the chances are he won't pass. So this was for me a great revelation that, this is anxiety, this is worry, and it is really crippling. It prevents me from being at my best to look after the present. So I cannot make the best contribution to create the future. I make a half-hearted contribution that's probably going to create more problems down the road, which often people do. When we act out of, when we're in distress or really overcome by anxiety, worry, or fear, or anger, the choices we make are inevitably not our best, and we regret them later on. So there's, now seeing that clearly and being able to really notice that, the next step is, okay, this is a really bad habit. That's what you've got to think of it as a really bad habit. Like, I'm pulling my ear all evening. It's a really bad habit. If I come in front of people and I'm doing this, there are some people who have such, it needs to be addressed somehow. Well, that propensity to anxiety and worry by projecting into the future, anticipating the worst and fearing the worst and the inability to deal with it, that's a bad habit. It makes life miserable for yourself and those around you. It cripples us and disempowers us. It makes us weak because we are not able to be at our best to make the best contribution possible. So what do we do? And here it does take some ability to harness, rein in the monkey mind, the mind that's just running on habitual patterns, the habitual patterns of what we've got. But we can change. We can change these habitual patterns. Meditation is a wonderful tool because it enables us to have some capacity to pull back from the momentum of the habit and move into a more spacious silent part of the mind before the creation comes forth, the capacity to stand, to just stop, stand back. Before the noise, there's the silence. The word is not before the silence. So the ability to have some, you know, kind of distance from the power of thought, from the thinking mind, from the monkey mind, from the discursive mind, that is just a conditioned, you know, conditioned pattern. That ability comes from some degree of training in awareness, in concentration. When we have that, we can, you know, have some distance and actually start abiding more and more in the silence, in the space of the mind. If you're very quiet, you can hear there's silence in your mind before you start filling it with all the different thoughts, possibilities. So, I'm going over time. First, right view. That understanding, the human condition is impermanent. The future is unknown. That's coming from right view. The second one is, I don't have to go to the future. I'm not going to the future. I'm going to wait for the future to come to me. I'm going to center myself in the here and now with this clarity of mind. And if I'm coming from this right view and this clarity of mind, wisdom, I will do what I can to look after this human condition, my life. What can I do to look after it as best as I can? And that way, I look after the future. Now, even knowing this, unfortunately, we all suffer from forgetfulness. And when I forget, what comes to the forefront? The old habit. The old habit is to project, oh, maybe that's going to happen. And I catch myself over and over again. That tendency is there. But at least I know that I can come back to the present. Now, I would encourage you very much to consider some of these reflections. Hopefully some of it resonates. Hopefully some of it is of value. And if it is of value and it helps you find a way of living which is less troubled, I am happy. Thank you all very much for listening.
I like the idea of meditation, but it seems like something that will come over time. I feel the need for a Band-Aid to get me over the hump until I am able to control the monkey mind and put some of that anxiety at bay. Mm-hmm. Thoughts about a Band-Aid?
Well, the strong, I very much encourage the contemplation and the reflection on the nature of life. It's to try and come to terms in a way of just, well, life is like this. I mean, the anxiety is because basically, we can't accept the uncertainty. That's what we're uncomfortable about. Anxiety and worry is all about just not being comfortable with uncertainty.
I like to be in control.
Well, that's because you're uncomfortable with uncertainty and not knowing. I'm the same. I like to control things too. If I could control everything, I would. And you poor people would. I'm sure you're all very grateful that I don't have that power. Nobody should have that power. It's a nightmare for nearly everybody else. But we do. We like certainty. We like knowing. We like that feeling in control, because that's reassuring to us. You know, then we don't have to have any. You know, there's no dark space around us. But there's no, that cannot be achieved. So, there are some ways, and I mentioned some, where, you know, it gives you a little bit more of that feeling. That's fine. But what I found more, I think more honest for me, and also more liberating, is this, you know, actually confronting the uncertainty and that it's unknown, and feeling comfortable being able to rise up and actually, you know, I'm not saying always, because we forget, but when I've contemplated and it's unknown, and I can be okay with it being unknown rather than having to be sure and know definitely this is the right decision and this is going to be the result. I don't know. So it does require a little bit of courage. It does require a little bit of courage to confront, and not confront, but to acknowledge and stand before the uncertainty in a way which is not, not intimidated. The human condition or mortality is not for the faint of heart, because it's fraught with so much uncertainty. That's what the mortal condition is, it's uncertain. I really encourage this. And try it with small things, like that you can actually abide with not knowing, abide with the fact that this is uncertain. And I'm not quite sure which is what's going to happen, but I can actually, I'm okay, I can wait. I won't go to it, I'll let it come to me. And it is like building a different way of being, or the right view, that contemplate this, come, so let it get under your skin in a way that it goes deep into your marrow. Yeah, it's uncertain. That's the way it is. It's not the way I want it, but that's the way it is. Now, how can I, what's my choice here? Denial? I can try distraction. Yeah, I can try some of that too. That works. But also, I can actually accommodate. I always say to people this, like for instance, pain, physical pain. Any pain that I have ever experienced in my life was bearable. And I would say it's true for you unless you fainted because of some pain. If a pain is unbearable to your conscious mind, you will faint. If a pain is unbearable to your physiological nervous system, body, you'll die. Now, some of you may have fainted because of pain, and that threshold is different for each person. But none of you have died. Now, it's kind of interesting, because we have so much fear of pain. It's like, well, if when it comes, you'll be amazed at what you can bear. But the thought of it is what we can't bear. It's the thought of it that's unbearable, and that's why there's this emotional. So failure is frightening, but when you fail, when it's come to you, you bear it. You know, whatever has come to me, obviously it's come to me, it's a fact. And you deal with it one way or another. But it's the thought of it, when we go out to it, project, oh, this is going to happen. And that's unbearable. Makes us tremble. And so it's like noticing this and then being able to say, leave it. Don't go to it. Leave it there. Deal with this. This is what I've got to look after now. This is, what can I do now? And what I can do now is actually in itself a humbling experience, because a lot of times I don't really know what's the best. You know, I want to look after the moment as best as possible. The fact is that quite a lot of times I don't know what the best is. So that's another, you know, coming to terms with that and just doing the best you can, the best you know, the best you have, because that's all that you've got. And you try and keep on building on that.
We have a question here that's online. How do you help a spouse or a loved one who has anxiety?
As I said, everybody has anxiety except those two rare individuals. If the anxiety, you know, you can... support is the best thing you can give to, and I'm not good, you know, when I talk, a lot of these reflections are because of, as I said, I see it in myself. My study is studying this human condition, human experience, with the guidelines that I've been made aware of. And often we feel that when we want to help our spouse or loved one, the best way for us to do it is to tell them, to fix them. So, and I have that propensity, you know, to fix them. What, you shouldn't worry. Don't worry about it. It's nothing. Why do you worry about it? It's ridiculous. Be reasonable. So all I'm doing is telling them, which isn't necessarily going to help. It's probably going to make it worse. And you know, what would be a better approach is, well, yes, you tell them once, you point out a few things, and then you're there to give support. That's your main role, is to give support. You're not there to be, you know, the spouse, you're not there to be their master of wisdom. You're not there to be their teacher, their guru. You're there basically to be their partner and support them. And, you know, and part of it, you do, it's not like you don't say anything, but you don't keep saying it. You don't keep teaching and teaching and how many times do I have to tell you? Because they already know what you've told them. It's they can't do it. So now they need support until they're able to do it. This is what I notice.
Well, John, I think it's more of a reflection than an answer, but I see the choice. Well, my background is counseling, psychology, and teaching. So, but I mean, I think what you're giving us is some tools here. And on the one hand, you know, if you're reacting to anxiety and worry, obviously that's a reactionary approach and kind of a defeatist, or I would see it as a victim approach, versus I think you're giving us an alternative, and that the alternative could be things like meditation. Personally, I do meditation, yoga, and I've been coming here since 72. So all these are positive approaches, and I think, you know, that's an empowerment. And I think it's empowerment that's the opposite end of that perspective. And I think, you know, at least it gives you a feeling of control. Maybe that's what we're looking for. And there's things that we can do through study and reflection and whatever. So
it's just thank you for the clarification on this anxiety and worry. What I was thinking is there are two aspects to this worry and anxiety. One is what's going to happen. That's one aspect. How am I going to react to what's going to happen? Like you said, if you step back and reflect, then we will see our patterns of how we react to the thoughts going on and how the outside is happening. So just to give a simple example, like a weather, you know, sometimes if, say, like if I have a picnic, you know, I get so worried that it's going to rain and what's the temperature and all those things, that's outside situation. But for that, a simple response is that if I have put a bright jacket in my car, why do I have to worry about that? Yeah, so simple, I mean, there are two aspects to it. You know, whether it's rain is going to come or not is an imaginary thing, that's outside thing. But how do I respond to it is in my hands, then worry completely disappears into our situation. So it's a clarity of the situation, like you said, reflect and how, what is my patterns of behavior for the anxiety and worry is the lessons we learn from observing life and meditation. So thank you very much for sharing your insights. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll take one more question and then... Hi, John. Very nice. Thank you. Also, just a quick Band-Aid when your mind is really moving fast and you can't even trying to reflect, you can't stop to reflect. I always like to just get into the now and get into the physical because it's my mind running around like the monkey. So it's that stop, where are my feet, look at my feet, and go for a walk or do something or do some yoga or something that pulls my breath awareness in. Where's my body? Is there a tree? And that stops the mind because the mind can't think of both things. At least mine can't. I can't. If I start doing yoga, I can stop worrying about whatever. Or if I go for a walk, then I don't have to worry. And that always helps me in that quick Band-Aid fix if the reflection isn't coming.
So. Right. Now, that's what I'm... that's very good. It's like what I mean by having, you know, invested some time in developing, you know, the skill of meditation, which is the capacity to be able to bring the mind to the present moment and settle the mind. So rather than letting it run, the body is always a very good object to help us anchor the mind in the present because the physical body is here now. And the breathing is another one, which is, all, you know, just, you know, this breath. Walking is extremely good because it releases tension and nervous energy. So walking, if you were, you know, quite brisk walking and walking, swinging your arms and relaxing, and those things really bring you into things that help you bring into the attention to the present, to the now, which is all that you really have. The rest of it is just your mind reaching out. And so, you know, it's once we're back here now, we all the wisdom that we, you know, through study and through practice, this is what we can work with, this now, and this now is okay. This now is okay. It's bearable, and most times it's not bad. And even when it's unpleasant, it's still bearable. I mean, every moment I've lived has been bearable. Some of it was pleasant, some of it not so pleasant, but it's all been bearable. Here I am, still here. And that's how it's just this, but it is a skill. And it would be a different talk to talk about how to, the practices that we can do to cultivate this skill, meditation and the various aspects of meditation, and many other things besides meditation that can facilitate cultivation of this skill. It's not just, I'm going to go a little bit over time. You know, my brother passed away a couple of years ago, and I went back and forth quite a number of times. And as I told you, he suffered from quite a bit of anxiety and worry. And the worst time for him would be at night, if he wake up, and then his mind would start thinking about stuff. You know, it's at night, that's you're weak. That's you wake up and then the mind races. And so he was, he had terminal cancer and he was in hospital. And this, he was kind of tormented by this. He'd wake up in the middle of the night and his mind would race about all the unpleasant things and all the things that had to be looked after, which he hadn't done. So he's trying to explain this to this nurse. And, you know, this nurse, all the nurses there were really nice, but this one nurse, she said, nope, that's not what you should do. When it's time to go to sleep, you go to sleep and you just shut off. That's it. You just shut your mind. It's not time to think about those things. It's time for you to go to sleep. You just tell that, shut off. And I'm sitting there thinking, boy, how long did it take you to learn to do that? I mean, I don't know anyone. I mean, I know a few, actually, I do know quite a number of very accomplished meditators who can do that. But no ordinary people that I know, none of my friends can do that. And how long did you? You know, it's ridiculous. Most of us can't. Most of us don't have that control. That we can just, but it's true that with practice and with developing various meditation trainings, we can cultivate the skill of bringing the mind to a state of balance, regaining sanity and balance, regaining that the mind that is anchored in the present, in wakefulness and calmness.